dream is alive.
GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present the By George Podcast with Brian Lawrence and Chris Jones. The original George Mason basketball podcast.
They're on their feet. Here, Hancock! Oh! Off the top of the backboard, no. Loose, Hancock, front court, Johnson. One Mason point, George Mason.
It's Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
May 21st, and we are dropping another podcast. Jonesy, say what's up to all of our 13 listeners.
What's up, Alan?
So, you know, we needed to get a summer series going. We're going to brand this the Vacationers. Why, Jones?
It's a little bit of a departure from Mason basketball. We will still cover Mason basketball, but, you know, as news is a little bit lighter in the summer, we're going to cover a whole range of topics outside of Mason basketball, but we will still cover it at the beginning of every episode. But yeah, we get to cover some fun stuff like, you know, Game of Thrones or whatever's happening in pop culture in general. So, you know, it should
Plus,
be fun.
The students are on vacation. You know, yeah. we're on vacation away from Mason basketball. And I got to say that I'm pretty happy about that. You know, last season was a bit of a struggle. Again, this is By George, the original George Mason basketball podcast. My name is Brian Lawrence. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Jones.
What up?
Let's get right into it. Mason basketball. We've had some departures. Let's talk about it.
So it's been kind of an up and down offseason thus far. Like, we've, you know, since the last game of the season, which was the defeat in the A-10 tournament, we've, you know, got some recruits, but we've also had some departures. What we're seeing early on is just sort of like a mass exodus of like assistants. So we had, let me see, what was the guy that went to William & Mary? Who was that? Dane Fisher, yes. He left the program, which, to be honest, was a bit of a surprise that William & Mary would go after Dane Fisher after like a subpar season with Mason under Paulson. But
people were up in arms about William & Mary firing their coach. So, you know, a replacement like the assistant for George Mason doesn't make a ton of sense to us. But, you know, looking into his history a little bit more, he did kind of handle a majority of our recruits. He is well connected in this area. Well, it's kind of a shame because he probably will pull recruits from us that we'll probably be targeting, unfortunately, similar talent levels.
One thing I just kind of wanted to say, though, with you mentioned that some people were surprised with the William & Mary firing. You know, a lot of the recruit or the players that left and that are transferring and they went into the transfer portal, they're actually getting picked up by high majors. So it looks like they actually had a pretty solid talent pool. I mean, some of these guys were highly coveted. They're going now to the Big Ten and other big conferences. So William & Mary definitely had some talent there. But now they're going to have to sort of start all over again with Dan.
It should be interesting, yes, to see what he does. But he's not all we lost. We also lost Aaron Kelly.
Who went to his alma mater. I understand it. I guess if, you know, you're tired of playing second fiddle, you want to be a head coach. He heads, what, up to Catholic?
Yep. So yep. Also staying local. Interesting. And then also our head of basketball operations, Ted Rawlings, just announced, I think, 2 days ago, that he was also leaving the program. So, you know, we still don't know who's filling Aaron Kelly's spot. There's a lot of speculation that it's Bryson Johnson, a guy who played for Paulson. He's from Canada. But then now you have to fill a basketball ops spot. Do you just promote the next guy up, that short guy? I'm blanking on his name. I do apologize. But, you know, do you just continue to promote within, you know, your own? We did bring in an outside guy
from Dartmouth. Yeah.
Pete Hutchins.
A lot of people were kind of scratching their heads because it's kind of like a program that emphasizes academics and not so much getting like premier athletes. And does this guy really know, you know, Paulson sort of preaches, we need athletes. And we bring a guy from Dartmouth, bit of a head scratcher, but we'll see. We've heard a lot of players and former coaches speak highly of him. So, you know, it's a little bit too early to tell
Which seemed forced. We tweeted out, you know, tweets from like major coaches around the league. Like, did we ask for those quotes? I think we must have.
It was weird. Like, they were like responding to something that hadn't really even started yet. I mean, a lot of people were kind of hating on the boards and maybe a little bit on Twitter, but it felt a little odd that people had to come out and say, like, he's a fantastic coach. It's and like, okay.
And the elephant in the room, Jared Reuter. You know, got to say, that's a massive botch from Dave coming onto our show to the end of the season when he's not even starting and we're blaming injury. I guess he's not injured enough to go try out to play for a pro team somewhere, but injured enough to not be able to jump 9 inches off of the ground.
Yeah, something was definitely not right with him. Anything from just his, like, running, like, he just looked... weird, like his running motion. Obviously, his, you know, you can't really speak to his lack of athleticism if he did have some sort of hip injury. But it's certainly a surprise. But I think most Mason fans, after seeing last year, will take the open scholarship. I mean, by all means, if you're still going to be injured and or producing like what you were doing last year, take a risk, take a flyer on someone, and let's see what happens.
And it is one of those situations where, you know, the By George crew had been begging for a transfer. We went out, we got a transfer from UVA, highly recruited coming out of high school. We were all psyched. It didn't work out. It blew up in our face. It actually worked out on how many who countered our opinion about transfers worked out. It bombed. There's no other way to look at it. It even had a ripple effect in the sense that Calix didn't get as many minutes as he probably should have. He lost a starting job to a guy who didn't necessarily earn it. And now we're left with a hole that we still have yet to fill. Like, of course, do we want an open scholarship spot? Yeah. But that leads us to another topic. Into a guy that, you know, you were kind of excited about, Woods.
Hunter Woods, yeah.
And I don't know why you're excited. I think you saw him hit a couple shots and got size, very under-recruited and not, you know.
It's not under-recruited, but solid frame. I liked how he could move with the ball for his size. He's 6'6", 6'7", definitely with a little bit of room to grow, but he was hitting his jumpers in like a video that leaked on Twitter. I don't know if it was shot by someone from the staff or his mother or whoever, but
It was shot by his mom.
Okay, well, whatever. I was a little encouraged, and the fact that it's at this point in the signing period, you don't have like a huge talent pool to pick from. So, was I kind of high on getting him? Yeah, but I was also kind of high on just getting anybody that's not like an absolute nub. That's a guy that we targeted. We've actually been targeting a few different Woods. We had Mika Adams Woods, who obviously has had a few other visits after our visit, so it doesn't look likely that we'll get him. So, you know, as of right now, we still have our three commits, Xavier Johnson, we have Jason Aduro, and Daddy coming in from Canada. So, with one scholarship left, who would you like to see DP target? Like a center, or do you think we might need a point guard?
It just has to be a big man. You know, coming into the season, you know, we're not even sure if Daddy's going to be eligible, if he's going to be forced into a red shirt, which means you can't red shirt Jason. And mm-hmm. and you'd assume that spot would be used for him, allow him to grow a little bit, you know, Calixt and Green and some sort of formation of, you know, a Jordan Miller and AJ on at the same time would suffice for next year. But, you know, now it's like he's got to play, he's got to produce if we don't get another big man. And so I'm thinking, you know, I was kind of excited to try to you know, even just a Danny Dixon type, you know, obviously not him, but someone
also,
that was
also quick
a
update
big man.
On Danny Dixon going to NC State.
He can't get playing time.
Who saw that coming?
if he does, man, mind explosion.
Right.
So, you know, who do we need to add? A big man for sure. I mean,
yeah,
Jordan Miller, someone I was tweeting back and forth with somebody and someone said Jordan Miller is more of a 3 than a 4, which I disagree with. And Jordan Miller liked that tweet. So
that says a lot. It does.
Yeah. What is he? So he may not be a 4 or 5. Mar, who started his career as a center, is definitely not a center. Right. And so, you know, we need to add in that position. So a lot's happened. Not a lot of positive additions. You got to hope that, that Coach Pete can step up and lure some guys. But other than that, I can't say we're too excited. I mean, we're losing Livingston, who's probably one of the best players, at least in the last 20 years.
Otis assistants and Grayer. Grayer's now kind of, you know, feeling out different schools. And you know, he did just graduate from Mason. So kudos to him and Otis for graduating. But let's you know, and you're saying that we're, there's not a lot to be excited about. And yeah, it's a little bit of a down off season, but I do really want to touch on one player that I do think that they, you know, if given the opportunity early, can kind of run with it. And that's Xavier Johnson out of Alexandria. I think he's Episcopal high school. So that's one guy that I'm keeping my eye on. I'm not going to really get too in-depth with him. We're obviously going to get into the recruits later on and at a different episode towards fall.
You have to be sized. I mean, the guy balled out, and people talk about his, you know, his like
level of competition
and his form. And I'm like, I'm not really seeing a hitch. People compared him to Marquise Moore. I'm like, man, this guy is stroking threes in every highlight I watch. It's just him with a James Harden step back.
Yeah, I don't get that call out. It's
like, are we
odd?
Watching the same guy?
Yeah, Moore had a very clear hitch. But you know what? One thing that actually Moore helped me learn later on is that I don't care how ugly your shot is, you know, just make it. And Moore started making that ugly shot more and more throughout his career. By his senior year, I felt comfortable with him taking that ugly shot. And as long as it's effective, I don't give a fuck.
What we do know is that DP starts freshman. And who's it going to be? I think we have a glaring hole at the point guard spot.
But a lot of people would point to, you know, Hartwell, obviously
like
showed
him.
Flashes, but, you know,
he's a
small
sophomore. It's not like his spot is not untakeable.
Actually, one thing that I want to get into and what we can do after the break is a quick little dive into the state of the program. So this is going to be like a little take on State of the Union address. So we're just going to kind of cover some big program overview type stuff. We'll do it quick, but let's have a break here and we'll come back to State of the Program.
I'm making money, may it marinate. I spend this shit like Gary Day. My watch look like a carrot cake. My friends say that I'm gaining weight. I told them I've been eating steak and shrimp and lobster, all that shit. Gangsta's what I call that shit. Fucked around and bought a whip. Heated seats and all that shit. Panoramic sunroof, I got Bluetooth, I should call your bitch. She says she want a baller, I can show you how a baller lives. Go shopping Neiman Marcus's for moccasins and cardigans. Yeah. Don't make me pull my card again. See, they don't give you limits when you keep that money coming in. You goddamn right, I be flossing. I don't care what the cost is. Y'all know who the boss is.
Picture yourself sitting on a beach. You're a bit sweaty, umbrellas up. Chicks with thongs are walking by.
Hey, big boy.
And you just have this, you know, your hand is kind of cold because you're holding a beverage. You forgot your koozie. But I'm going to tell you, that summer 2019 beverage, it is the Natty Light Strawberry Lemonade. It's delicious. It quenches your thirst. Oh, my God. It doesn't even taste like beer. It's for all women, everyone, all ages. Jones, have you tried it?
I have not. But
wow.
It sounds really, really average.
I mean, it tastes like lemonade. Doesn't taste like a beer. So if you're looking for, I have a new beer beverage every single summer. Last year, it's the Truly Waters. The year before, it's the Summer Shandies. And this year, I'm telling you, it's the Natty Light Strawberry Lemonade. Back to By George.
There ain't a scuff on these weights. I got one up on you lames. Two up, I'm cooler than Bueller. Coach like Don Shula. I'll school your head up my jeweler with moolah. Might just go scuba Bermuda. Shout out to Booster the Shooter. Slutty boys trailie be fooling. Troop is the movement. I move with 1 a.m. music. Let's do it. J-Black exclusive.
Mr. Speaker, I present to you the president of Mason Basketball Fanhood.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here today with my co-president, Chris Jones. And we're going to talk about the fan, you know, just kind of our opinions as the fans of the state of the George Mason basketball program. Some highs, some lows, some just straight purgatory.
Yeah, this is going to be a take on the State of the Union address. So, you know, is it going to be complete hype like the State of the Union? No. Or, I mean, we're going to point out what's going right and what's going wrong. So, first off, Brian, do you have... Let's start on what's going right. So I think that we could both say that we're heavily encouraged with, you know, some of the younger players. You know, is this standard for any season? We're always encouraged by younger players. But again, we have some guys that are going to, you know, start coming into their own. I think we're all waiting for Javon to show us the next leap. Miller showed flashes of being great as a freshman. We have some young guys coming in like Xavier Johnson that could, you know, pop. So there are some good things in terms of our core roster that I think we're liking. Things like the facilities getting updated is great. Obviously all these assistants jumping ship isn't that encouraging, but there's always sort of this hope that some of the new guys that come in maybe elevate the program to another level.
Bring a different energy, just switch things up a little bit. I would like to say continuity is kind of key here. We didn't have a bunch of players transfer. We had one player transfer that we actually wanted to leave, or not even transfer, but just retire. Right. And so the continuity of DP, you know, at this point, he's going into his fifth year. This is that extra season. He's got one more. And so I would say that's a positive, is just kind of having him give him a chance and see what this fifth year brings for him. At this point, it's all his guys. It's his program. His coach, his assistant coaches are gone. I mean, his footprint is going to be, you know, dead center on this program this year. What else is going well? I think I have to agree with you on the young talent. Jordan Miller, these players are fun to root for. They're diamonds in the rough. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys work their ass off. They're constantly, you know, putting in the work, not too much drama, you know. So I think the team is easy to root for, good, likable guys. And then I'd have to say, you know, something good is just kind of getting into that high upper tier of the A-10 the last few years, you know, with a chance to get into the top four each of the last 3 years. Yes, we blew it, but it's a huge improvement from losing on Wednesday of the tournament. And right. That's undeniable.
So let's foil that with what's going wrong. And I think one thing I want to piggyback off of is that, you know, we are getting these, you alluded to the fact that these young guys are under recruited. They're sort of these diamonds in the rough, and you know, they all have this prove it mentality, and it's great. And you really want to see one of these guys like really pop off and take the next level. But the other thing, conversely, is that is DP maybe trying to go too deep into the weeds and find, you know, these, you know, diamonds where he should maybe just already be looking at guys with stars? Are we concerned that he's not getting kids with stars?
We're definitely making offers.
Yeah, we're making offers. And a lot of people would debate, what do stars really mean at, you know, the mid-major level? You know, a two-star versus a three-star isn't going to be a huge difference. But I still think we'd be encouraged if we saw a three-star or, you know, God forbid, a four-star, you know.
Mar still being his best recruit, and then obviously Reuter before it was a dumpster fire. Right. But those are probably his two best pulls so far. And there's a lot to be left desired there. I think we are concerned.
Yeah, that's kind of what's going wrong. And at least my first, like the biggest thing that we're doing right now is we're not recruiting to the level at which I think DP wants to. I mean,
and we're losing within the A-10. We've lost to UMass. We've lost to Rhode Island. Both point guards, and now we have a hole at the point guard position. So, you know, it's interesting. I think I do believe in Coach Simpkins, and so, you know, I think he can pull in this area. I think we continue to work this area, look at a Jordan mm-hmm. Miller and a Xavier Johnson, both two guys that I think we can build off of for the next three to 4 years. So I do kind of see us getting a slight stranglehold on that tier of talent in this area. All this being said, plenty of negatives. We're not going to go into just straight hate mode because we are trying to keep you inspired. But is DP on the hot seat?
I would say if he delivers another mediocre to below average season, yes, I think there will be chatter. I think if he delivers a flat out stinker season, you know, his job may be up for grabs at the end of the year. If he can deliver us another surprise, like we saw with Marquise Moore's senior year a few years ago, where he, you know, miraculously got us over the 20-win plateau, you know, then yeah, he's safe. But I do think with what happened last year, and the results were fine, I guess, you know, we'll take, you know, fourth or fifth place in the A-10, wherever we finished in the final regular season. But, you know, it's just not good enough. We're not making the next leap. And
we didn't
beat
a single Power 5 team last year.
Right. We're not getting quality wins. We're not winning the games that we need to win, like a homecoming game or the opening night or senior night. Like, we got blown out by VCU on senior night.
Or St. Bonaventure's late in the season, which was definitely the game for fourth place.
Right. And so, you know, and we can give him the excuses of injuries and players leaving and things like that, but it ultimately, like, the buck stops at the coach. And, you know, again, writing out mediocrity and the fact that the fan base could say, well, we're respectable now, that's fine, but we've been respectable now for a few years. Let's take the next level. Like, you
and
know,
it's not as if we're respectable in some, like, elite A-10 years. The A-10 was down.
It was trash last year. And I mean, it snuck in.
And we're
two
grinding
teams
for fifth place. We're not like comfortably sitting there. No, we're like having to pull out tough games.
And I swear to God, if people point to the fact that the A-10 is getting better this coming year and it's more of an excuse for him to finish like fifth, sixth, you know, whatever.
Ninth.
It's like, no, it's all like the A-10. It will always be competitive, and DP has to be a part of that, like, competitive nature. Like, he has to have an elite team at this point, at least in the top four conversation.
And everyone's talking about four teams right now, and no one's mentioning George Mason.
Yeah, I've seen some early preseason polls were you know, being projected anywhere between sixth and eighth. You know, it's not encouraging, at least the public perception from outside the program.
I mean, look who's coming back with tight players. You got the Bonnies. Yes, they lost two kind of studs, but they're young. And you have Rhode Island. They just landed Toppin's little brother.
Right.
You got Dayton, who has
VCU,
like five transfers waiting on the wing. And then, yeah, obviously VCU, who's young and hungry, and Rhodes is being talked about replacing, like, major jobs around the country.
And there's always going to be that surprise team, too. You know, maybe this is the year St. Joe, like, someone's going to just randomly pop. You know, Duquesne, I mean, probably not Duquesne, but, you know, someone will randomly
maybe
be
Duquesne
there.
I mean, there's teams that we will be fighting with from 5 to 8, and that's just the way it's going to be. And so, you know,
short answer, yes, there's a little bit of a hot seat. So.
Yeah. And if you're someone out there that's, you know, defending DP, we get it. You know, we understand the culture's changed. You know, I would ask you to think about all the things he's been gifted, like the practice facility, like the updates, like the comfort of extra year extensions, you know, like, there's things that he's been given and we want to see, like, we want to see the, you know, those actions rewarded. So yes, DP is on the hot seat.
He also, one quick note, unlike Paul Hewitt, he wasn't necessarily thrown into the A-10 like, you know, like it was cold water in a pool. He wasn't just thrown in and expected to swim. He's had a few, you know, he had at least two seasons to kind of swim around, get a feel of the water, you know, and now he's been in the pool for quite some time. Start floating, because it feels like we're kind of sinking at times. So, you know, you've had your time. You know, no more excuses. And yeah, that seat is just kind of warm. It's kind of like, you know, I can't even think of anything right now. But
what needs to be done? You know, I think it's very simple. I think that, you know, we need to find an identity both on offense and defense. I'm not sure what it is. We lost Otis Livingston, who, you know, going into the season was an A-10 first teamer. Obviously just had surgery, walked in graduation on one leg. So clearly he was injured. There was speculation.
Well, he rolled, but yeah.
Clearly there was speculation, like, was he injured or not? You know, is it an excuse? It doesn't appear so. He, you know, gave us everything he had. He was our identity. You look to last year, it's like, yeah, Kyer had some good games and whatnot, but Otis Livingston was our identity. Who's going to take that next step to be that team captain? And, you know, are they going to be able to guard on ball better? And, you know, we're going to need some scoring somewhere else besides off the pick and roll.
Here's the thing, though. When your team identity is one player and that player doesn't work out, it's kind of like having all your eggs in one basket. It's like not having a diversified stock portfolio. That one stock goes down and your bank account's zippy. So you really have to spread the wealth, and you have to have more of an identity that expands past one player, one star player. And, you know, we'll see if DP can get others involved. You know,
and get guys involved who need coaching, like an AJ Green. Like, how many years are we going to say the guy can't, you know, rotating on defense? It's like, well, whose fault is that? I'm not sure who to place blame on, and that's not what we're here to do. But what needs to be done is we need to take advantage of the roster that we have, and it needs to happen like tomorrow. And then on defense, who are we? By George has been begging for full court. We got it. It bombed. And then we went back into like what people call a pack line, which it's not. And, you know, so what was our identity on defense? I really don't know on either side of the ball. And that needs to be identified right away. We can't start off 0-3 versus three nubs again. It just can't happen. And I think if that happens, I'm going to write the whole season off, and it's hashtag Caputo 2020.
Right. And I do think when it comes to identity, I saw last year more of an identity with negative qualities, you know, getting out to slow starts, giving up backdoor cuts, you know, giving up easy layups. You know, I saw like a lot of you know, things that I would identify on the negative side as you know, trends that we're showing. So let's correct those. Like, let's hope next year or this coming season, you know, we correct these issues and have some, you know, positive.
I don't know if, like, obviously I don't have the stats in front of me. This is not your Ken Pom podcast. But we turn
-4 = 6-9 rebounds.
We turn the ball over uncontested so much, dribbling the ball off our feet, throwing it out of bounds, you know, little simple turnovers here or there. That stuff was surprising last year and must get cleaned up in order to proceed. Guys, that is the state of the program. If you agree, let us know. If you disagree, let us know. But we are here for you to keep you guys the know during the off season. We're going to transition away from basketball. We're going to get to the basketball tournament a little bit later. So if that's something that you're interested in, stick around. If not, and all you came here was for current George Mason basketball, turn it off, because now we're talking Game of Thrones.
Oh, boy.
And Jones, you're a late adopter. Tried to get you to watch early on. Wasn't necessarily your scene. Then you married someone who's obsessed with it. And now you're kind of in. So it's fun to talk to you because you don't necessarily have that, like, bias love for the show like some of us do.
I think, I get to assume sort of a role as like everyone else. I don't have all the knowledge in the world with the show. I missed like a season or something, but because I married like an absolute obsessive freak over Game of Thrones, I have all the details. Like I'm up to speed. And so, you know, I think the question comes in, what did you think of this last season? What did you think of the finale, which just aired recently this past Sunday? Because from my perspective, it was a satisfying show to watch. The final season was good and all. I think that there are certainly some positives. You know, the you know, battle in the darkness with the Night King and all that. I thought that was actually, I really liked that episode. I liked it being at night. But then again, I definitely saw all the criticism that was online, you know, from the poor writing to the script and how it was delivered and the pacing of the show. And it all felt just kind of rushed. And that sort of culminated into a finale, which just aired. That was, to me, you know, somewhat satisfying, but a little cheesy. You know, we actually saw a lot of this kind of coming a mile away, so it wasn't too surprising even. So
I think, lukewarm. You know, I'm not going to just completely rip it like some people are. I think we have reached a moment in
funny, in group chat, you've been ripping it all freaking month.
I just like to go at Peter, a third member of our group chat. But, you know, I would say I enjoyed it. I think what you get with the cheesiness and the rush factor is just cramming it all into six episodes, and then what, eight episodes season?
Why cram? You didn't have to cram.
And you spent
HBO would have given you 30 freaking episodes to wrap it up.
And you got plenty of funding. It wasn't as if like you couldn't
mil
afford
per
it.
Episode, yeah.
So you know that was what kind of killed me, and I think killed everyone. It just seemed like they ran out of material, as you pointed out. The guys are doing a trilogy of Star Wars, so maybe they were already moved on to their next venture. But it just kind of seemed like cheesy. Like people were calling episodes, you know, an hour before they started. And there's plenty of things that I could point out that I didn't like. I'm going to keep it simple for the sake of not boring our audience. Bran and Arya simply did not use their powers, like, ever. If they did, it wasn't visible. You know, did like, Arya used her...
face swap?
Just to get back at the red wedding and the death of her mother and brother. Other than that, you really didn't see it. And so, you know, Bran is now, you know, king of the land. And did he deserve
spoiler
it?
Spoiler alert. Hopefully you've watched.
He wasn't even in the last episode. So those two things, you know, I really can't get past. Other than that, I cocked back. I enjoyed it. But what we really need to hear about is, did Dany enjoy it? Dany being your wife, not
no,
Dany being
she,
the
she,
queen of dragons.
She's an enthusiast through, like, via the book predominantly. And so the show deviated from the book back when... I mean, Jon Snow is still dead in the book, by the way. So that's how far the show has departed from the book series. But no, she wasn't too pleased. I mean, she cried. But, you know, she cries at some commercials, so it's not like that's saying much. But
just wait till you have a kid. You'll be crying, too.
Right. Well, and so I think the major gripe we had were just a ton of inconsistencies, things that may have been set up over the course of many seasons or throughout the book just weren't really brought to fruition later on in the final season. And I think that it made it seem kind of like, okay, I guess. But yeah, and then like there were just like sometimes inconsistencies with like timing and flow. Like when the one pirate guy washed up on shore when Jaime's walking by and they get into a little battle, and then Jaime's stabbed twice. He has like enough energy to climb back into the city, and then
he didn't even just
sister,
get stabbed.
Then,
he got his ass beat.
Right,
he got beat up, stabbed twice, and then still somehow died with Cersei underneath bricks when everyone wanted to see that bitch burn.
Right, and then there's also inconsistencies with the dragons and their vulnerability. A dragon could be brought down by a few arrows from a boat, apparently, or they can just blow right through a whole fleet the next episode and murk an entire city. So right. It's like, you know, how strong are these things? Like
the war stuff was definitely botched. There's a lot of, you know, like, why would they send the Dothrakis into the night against dead zombies and then shoot arrows at them?
Best scene of the season, though, for me, was sending the Dothraki army out into the darkness versus the zombies, and essentially seeing all their flames go dark was just a very menacing, like, back against the wall, like, this huge army's coming, and they took out the Dothraki army, like, in seemingly 30 seconds.
And the cinematography is probably, you know, a top three highlight of the whole season. Between that, some of the scenes of the city getting burned down by the dragon were just awesome. The fight between the Hound and his brother on the steps had some awesome shots. So, you know, you could see where they
strongest
spent...
man in the world can't poke out eyeballs.
You can see where you know, the money was spent. Jones, talk, it got 18 million viewers. Talk a little bit about where that is in relation to other major shows.
So a lot of people will speak to the fact that it's a cultural phenomenon. It's a once in a lifetime, once in a generational type of show that really you know, engaged everybody, man, woman, black, white, old, young. I think everyone really liked Game of Thrones. The numbers, at least early on in the return, were 18 million viewers. In my mind, I'm thinking like a normal episode of Big Bang Theory, like 2 years ago, was averaging 18 million. Like,
it's hard to read. I mean, when you compare it to like the MASHes of the world and things like that.
Right. Yeah. MASH had 80 something million, you know, and Seinfeld finale, I think 50, 60 million. Like a lot of these shows had these huge finales. There's obviously a ton of money wrapped up in Game of Thrones. It's obviously producing a lot of money. The difference being that it's on premium cable. The Sopranos finale got 12 million, just to put it in perspective. So, I, in my mind was thinking like, would 30 million people be watching? Like you would think, it feels almost as if everybody's watching it. So I don't know.
I do wonder, like I am watching it under some name, like some chick named Jessica is like the account that I've signed into. So I'm like, I don't really know. Like
named Jessica.
I don't know how they're reading that, but you know, one thing that tilted me kind of just about like to the aftermath is like the blank comparison to like Sopranos, not the numbers, but just like how it's the same ending. It's like, can draw a different conclusion. Everyone knows that the Sopranos was a big season finale. It wasn't the same. It's not similar. So stop that. But this is By George, the Vacationers series. And, you know, we Chris and I spend probably way too much time watching TV. We're going to talk about Barry on our next show.
Oh, I love Barry.
But let's get in, because that was a season finale. Hopefully, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it, you go crush it. It will only take you about 8 hours, 30-minute episodes. There's
only 8 hours.
There's 16 total, so you can run right through it. But before our next show next Tuesday drops, and let's get into another interest that will probably be a reoccurring theme on this show.
Okay,
music.
Oh.
Vampire Weekend,
oh,
for probably all of 2019, had been dropping little tracks here or there. Finally put out their album. It's a bit long, but I want to get your...
It's a double album.
But I want to get...
6 years in between the last album, 2013. I was like graduating grad school, 2013, living in Roslyn. Times were easy back then. And now it's like I've waited this long. I've now gotten married. I've moved to a different city. You've had a child. A lot's happened in that 6 years. And what we get is like this like adult Vampire Weekend album called Father of the Bride. I've been waiting so long for it. It delivered. And, you know, because the lead singer is roughly our age, it feels like I'm sort of aging with them as well. So like, just getting like, and he also just like married Rashida Jones. So he's like
silly.
A newlywed. Yeah, silly. And so, yeah, it's just this like great double album that's like, it departs sort of from their norm, but still has their sound. I kind of make like the sort of comparison to, they are like the Kanye of rock. Like Kanye can reinvent himself while still being Kanye in every album. You still hear him, but he's doing something different. And that's kind of like what Vampire Weekend's done throughout their entire discography, from, you know, the you know, opening album, which was just very college classical indie, to all the way up until now, which you have more of a jam band. It's a bigger sound. You have female vocals. Eddie Lacy comes on, or not Eddie Lacy. Eddie Stacy. I don't know what his name is, but either way. Yeah. But yeah, just like a ton of flavor. It's a full album. It feels great for this time of the year. If you're going on a walk in the spring, it's just, oh, Steve Lacy, that's the name. If you're going on a walk on like a summer evening, listen to this album. It's fantastic. I can't even pick out my favorite because they're like all my favorite. So
I would, you know, and I was never a Vampire Weekend fan. You know, I felt like, you know, it's kind of even hard to identify them. You know, you call them indie, but they always had a different sound to them. You know, my issue with the album, I actually really like the album. I find it enjoyable for all the reasons that you say, like if you're going on a run or you're just kind of lounging around, it's perfect.
Like positive, upbeat.
Right. And so my issue with it is like, you know, the pre-drops got me so psyched, but they actually ended up being my favorite song. So like a Harmony Hall or a 2021, like those are still my go-tos, on the album itself. So that would just be like one negative that I would have to say.
I think it speaks highly to a band that when they release like a new album, you know, their songs from the newer album can reconfigure your top five of their favorite songs. So the fact that they're staying relevant, and like for me, I think Unbearably White off the album is like top five song of theirs all time. And I think that's fantastic that they could still do that. You know, if you go to one of their concerts, you ask everybody in the crowd, no one would have the same top two favorite songs. And that just speaks highly to the fact that they have this like appeal. You know, everyone likes their own different songs from their catalog. And so Yeah, I just thought that there were some great tracks on that. A lot of stuff's been dropping lately, though, beyond Vampire Weekend. I mean, you know, Tyler, the Creator, just released Igor, which I actually think is actually pretty good.
You've listened to it?
Yeah, it's so Tyler's obviously going to be like always a little bit off the rails, a little bit different, not for everybody, not everyone's flavor, but I do like the Igor album. There's definitely some fresh beats, and you know, he's got like a song with Kanye. You know, it's pretty good, at least my opinion. But
I'm gonna check it out. You know, one thing you brought up on the when talking about Vampire Weekend is Steve Lacy. He has a song that we both kind of heard early on called Dark Red. It's what he's most known for. So he's still dropping new tracks.
He's also 20.
That's super huge that he got on Vampire Weekend's album, not one but two tracks. And he kind of made his name because, you know, he's a black dude.
Plays,
you know,
guitar.
Yeah, looks like he
bisexual.
Could be
bisexual.
So interesting guy. Do check him out. And music is going to be a mainstay. We're going to keep it at just Vampire Weekend right now, yeah. And giving you some shoots off of Steve Lacy and Tyler, the Creator, to go check out. We want to keep it kind of slim, and the next episode we'll have more tunes for you. We're going to take a little break, a little station identification, and then we're right back into the basketball tournament. You are listening to By George, the original George Mason basketball podcast.
And now you're enjoying the By George summer series titled Vacationers.
All right, so the basketball tournament, you know, ironically, the news broke on our podcast.
A quick question. TBT. It's TBT tournament. What does the TBT stand for? The basketball tournament.
And I think that kind of, you know, it's a symbol for the rest of the league. Yeah, they're doing a lot. They're
on
they're on ESPN. They got representation all over America. It's gone way farther than I thought it would. They're in their sixth season, I guess. Really? You can call it. And so, you know, it's we are two dudes that started a podcast hating on this. We actually know one of the owners of this whole thing, but it is kind of difficult to navigate the website. I signed up, I received 10 points, and there's a whole list of things you can do to receive more points. But what do these points get me? What is
it's like, do I get like the winnings? Like, I'm kind of confused like by that. It's like you'll get 5% of the winnings if you hit a certain point total. And I'm like, do I really get money if I do stuff? Like,
and then I clicked on how, and then it just explained to you how to sign up for the tournament. And so unless like Chris Jones and Brian Lawrence are putting a team together and getting out there and winning the tournament, I'm not sure how we're making money off this venture. Right now, I'm currently in 84th place with 10 points, which leads me to believe that just like everyone has 10 points.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of confusion on that. There's also confusion on like, how does a team earn one of the
spots.
58 spots that there are or whatever. So, you know, we don't know. And it's not really explained. And so Mike Mo actually recently hit us up and said, hey guys, we need you to help promote. And we're happy to do it. So you can expect us to get more involved here.
In fact, we had 161 fans signed up through the website prior to us doing a push. And now where are we at?
I just verified at 196. So maybe we had a push for the extra 30, which I still think is low, like 196. Now, it is kind of annoying to have to do like a two-step verification just to like get my 10 points on the TBT.com.
The fact that you have to fill out a name and multiple other lines of information about yourself just to become a fan, it's like, do I really need my email address in another database?
Yeah.
Like, probably not. But
and the website instantly asked me, they can access your location. Is that okay?
I'm like, that was creepy. I was like, why?
I'm like, wow. So this is just an email generator, right? I mean, like, that's what we're signing up for.
Here's the thing with the TBT tournament, or TBT, whatever the fuck you want to call it. So actually, I think the TBT tournament is actually this great idea. So you have like a ton of these schools with a great, you know, history of college basketball, but they kind of fly under the radar. So a team perfect for this type of program is like VCU. They have like a ton of great alumni that could probably compete in these little tournaments. After, you know, they obviously don't have players big enough that they all are going to the NBA, but some that are like maybe vying for it, or they're sort of still in the D League. So, you know, you have these fan bases that are craving to see some sort of summer content, like summer games that involve like players that they know and love. So, you know, you see a ton of schools. Wichita State has their own alumni group. You know, Mason's obviously trying to do theirs. So you just have like all these schools that are just throwing these TBT teams together. And I just think it's a wonderful idea. It's similar to sort of to like what the Big Three did. It's just kind of like playing off of that sort of nostalgia of these older players that you still love to death.
And basketball is worldwide now. And, you know, so the Big Three may not get a ton of viewers, but some people are watching it. You know, so basketball can kind of hold its clout underneath the NBA, you know, including the NBA G League, which is getting new facilities and new arenas to play in. So, I mean, I think just kind of as basketball grows, we'll see more and more of these.
But like, who wouldn't want to see like Will Thomas, Follering Campbell, playing with like Brian Allen and Sherrod Wright? Like, this is just like a dream made it happen. Like, we never got to see this at Mason, and now we're going to see like all of our favorite players on the court at once playing against VCU alum. Like, that is just like mind explosion. So there's like plenty to look forward to with this tournament. And I think, yeah, if they perfect the system, maybe rename it, you know, if ESPN took a hold of this thing and like made it their own, like, I think the ratings would be huge.
You got to imagine they're going to try to sell it off.
But it's like, I do think it's also very unique with even like the style that they play. I don't know if you're up to date with how they do the ending of these games. It's kind of confusing. Maybe PD Buckets can explain it better, but it's actually, I don't really remember it myself, but there's like,
because it bombs. Yeah. It is interesting in these like lower level leagues to try different stuff. Why not?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of what led to girls switching to four quarters. And so you have, you know, sometimes these smaller leagues make big changes. You know, I would say, 196 is still not enough. If you're a Mason alum, what are you looking forward to right now? You know, like, if you're a Mason basketball fan, I'm almost more excited to watch Mike Moe, Brian Allen, Will Thomas suit up than I am to watch in November. So, you know,
I know.
Go sign up. It's ridiculous. We should be rallying around this. All like, we will be covering it. So it's kind of, there is something that kind of annoys me here. Will Thomas introed it, or kind of broke the news on our podcast around homecoming. And I told him I wanted that team to be named Giant Killers. I thought that would be awesome. We would help sponsor it. We would make their logos. You know, of course, it was a long shot. It was never going to happen.
It's so kind of violent.
So the team is the Green Machine, which is obviously an ode to Doc, our boy, yeah. Doc. And so, you know, they have all the social media stuff out there. Go follow them. Let's hype it up. And your boys, you know, Jones is in Richmond. We got students that want to go down and cover it. Ron will be snapping pictures, and we'll be tweeting about it and having interviews here shortly. So stay tuned for all that type of content from our guys of the Green Machine. Anything else we got to say, Jones?
I think that is it.
It's Tuesday, so tomorrow's hump day. Make sure you go hit those sheets, and that's about all I got. Hopefully you guys tune in and enjoy some Mason basketball talk through the summer.
And just to recap, we did a Mason basketball overview, we did a state of the program, we did our review of Game of Thrones, that segment, which we forgot to title it as By George R.R. Martin. and then we did a little bit of a music recap and then ended it with a TBT update. So once again, fantastic episode. Loved getting back into this. Expect another episode next week.
Yeah,
Anything else?
Every Tuesday. So just kind of, you know, we haven't been structured in our 4 years. We're going into our fifth year of production as By George, which is crazy to think about. And we do have some goals set to be more consistent. Look for us every single Tuesday going forward through the summer. Guys, we love you. We're out.
Vacationers. A trip's what I need.